And we're back here on Cambridge Inside Out, part two here on May 20th, 2025. A big item that finally came to fruition in, I guess it would have been late March, was the process that began with the Charter Review Committee a few years ago, and then it was, batting back and forth and whatever. So eventually, the City Council did settle on a home rule petition, with the assistance of the law department. Actually, tremendous credit goes to the law department for making sure that all the any potential contradictions were, ironed out so that it was a consistent document. And then that was voted unanimously eventually, and filed with the state. Which now it's still anybody's guess whether the local affairs committee and what have you, eventually it goes through the process, in which case it would come back if it comes back early enough, and to make it onto the municipal election ballot this year. It'd be a separate ballot, one for Cambridge, for city council, one for school committee, and then presumably one on the city charter. There are not really any fundamental changes from the planning charter other than reformatting of the language. It would still be a strong city manager form of government. It would be a mayor still elected by the city council indirectly, so it's not a popular election. Still using proportional representation at large elections, same number of people elected for each position. There are a few other minor changes. They really stumbled on a few points here, and I probably have spoken about this in the past. For example, they pretty much had eliminated all citizen petition process. I said, that's crazy. And I brought it up and brought it up and brought it up, and eventually they had to go, oh, you're right. And so the citizen petition process, which was part of the planning charter, make no mistake about it. So that's back. There were other proposals from the Charter Review Committee for what they call citizen assemblies and a few other things that sort of in that same ballpark that were rejected. It is perhaps worth noting that certain more potentially more controversial items like non-citizen voting, 16-year-old voting, even moving to even year elections would probably be poison pills that the state legislature would not take too kindly to. So those were taken out for possible future actions down the road, but so not part of this home rule petition. It's interesting to note that Somerville is going through a similar process, and they also took out those same poison pills. So anyway, I imagine since it's more of a kind of reshuffling of words, quite honestly, that there shouldn't be, it shouldn't even be controversial, I think, the passing of the new charter. So that's been the bag. City of Cambridge did get its AAA bond rating from all the three major credit agencies again. This was also in late March. There are two Nexus studies, apparently one in process called on the incentive zoning. Basically, this justifies the linkage fees that the city imposes on new commercial development. So they can't just arbitrarily say, give us $1 million for every square foot. They have to justify everything. And there was some big increases last round, and we'll see where it goes from now. There are concerns that by jacking up those linkage fees too high, that you basically squelch development completely. I don't know if that's really true, but it's a possibility. And maybe I don't know if the city kind of jumped the shark when it last did these changes, but so be it. In a related matter, there's now in the last couple 3 weeks, let's say, some big issues about inclusionary zoning, is different than incentive zoning. Inclusionary zoning is the thing we first passed in 1998. It says that if you're going to build a housing development of 10 or more units, the city will mandate that you must provide it. Back then it was 15% inclusionary, affordable subsidized housing units. And then but you got a bonus when you did that, so that you could actually get an extra market unit for every one you gave to the city, so that the effective rate was a little more in the neighborhood of about 12% inclusionary. So in their wisdom, he says somewhat facetiously, in 2016 or 17, I believe it was, the city jacked it to a flat net 20%. So that's a big, big, big jump, nearly doubling it. And there is strong evidence that this has pretty much killed housing development, affordable and otherwise, in Cambridge. It's actually better. You do better turning multifamily homes into single family homes rather than building larger multifamily projects with such a strong inclusionary requirement that you can't even make the numbers work. Or as the developers say, it just doesn't pencil out. The math doesn't work, they say. And my friend Patrick Barrett has written quite a bit about this, and a lot of people in the housing development community have been coming out saying, look, you need to take a look at this. There are a lot of places from San Francisco and elsewhere have already either eliminated some of their inclusionary housing ordinances or scaled them back in order to, or as Patty Nolan has pointed out on a number of occasions, well, we may have a 20% inclusionary requirement now, but 20% of zero is still zero. And if in fact the mandate is, if it is indeed too stiff, then you basically are working against the goal of affordability in housing. So that's a big issue, and it ain't going nowhere. It's a live issue right now. Make no mistake about it. A few significant passings I'll mention here. One was the queen of Harvard Square was Pebble Gifford, who passed away several months ago. Really a very significant passing. She sort of defined a lot about citizen activism in and around Harvard Square. My neighbor Bob Campbell, who was the architect writer for the Boston Globe, he passed away not too long ago. I'm going to mention specifically another person named Doan Perry, who was Doan was the head of the Mid Cambridge Neighborhood Association for a while. And he and his wife Karen had moved out to Western Mass, but he passed away not so long ago. Real, real wonderful fellow. With his passing, it certainly triggered thoughts in my mind about the sort of thankless job of stepping up and fulfilling the role of being like the president of a neighborhood association. You know, does anybody want to do this? You know, hear nothing but crickets, right? So, you know, I want to just sort of do a shout out to not only Doan, but, and I'm sure I missed some of them, but Joan Lorenz once played that role. John Pitkin absolutely played that role with the Mid-Cambridge Neighborhood Association. I can't remember if Fritz Donovan did. He's certainly been active with it. And certainly Joan Pickett, who might still be doing that had she not moved on to the city council and then sadly passed away this past year. So again, you know, my hat's off to all the people who willingly take on the role of being chairs and presidents of things in contexts where a lot of people would just rather show up for a meeting and eat the pizza, you know. So, you know, again, we remember them. On the traffic transportation bicycle lane front, which is sort of sadly up like a big deal in Cambridge, and not just in Cambridge, it's a big deal in Boston too, and a lot of places, right? But there was a move where there were, you know, was it last year, where they turned Garden Street into one way in order to accommodate two-way bike lanes, or bike lanes on either side of the street. Then it was a counter petition from other people, and again, we can all argue about who's outnumbering what. I don't think that's relevant. I think questions about traffic design and bike lanes should not be a plebiscite, should never be based on just who managed to get the most signatures. It should be based on the merits. So anyway, there was a lot of pressure to restore two-way operation to Garden Street. That's good for me, actually. But, you know, there are some people who now the city council took a vote to restore it back to two-way operation, which means some parking will be lost. So now some people are happy with that. Some people are unhappy with that. But, you know, I think that's just the way it is with everything, really. not that it's strictly related, but I live on Broadway in Cambridge and mid Cambridge, and we are sort of on schedule to get the whole nine yard, the whole treatment with the bike lane stuff and the removal of most of the parking on Broadway. Many people from my local neighbors here on Broadway, toward people up closer to Harvard Square, were very concerned about the parking issue because, unlike some places where, there's parking lots for businesses that you could accommodate people in, we don't have that here. We got what we got, and that's it. And, where I live, even right down the street at the City Hall Annex, City Hall Annex, well, ironically, the Department of Transportation, of Traffic, of Parking and Transportation, have taken away spaces so that their employees can have parking on the street next adjacent to their building. They've actually all across the street over the old Longfellow School. You can't even park on one whole side of the building now here because that's all exclusive now for people who are going to be at the school during school hours. So, but then if you're here on the weekend, I mean, I guess you could park short term there. But anyway, there's a lot of issues about who gets to take away parking and for what reason. And for people like myself, I have concerns about it because there are a lot of times I do need to pull a vehicle up in front of my house. And if the city goes through with what they're proposing, I'll never be able to do that again. I'll never be able to have a truck come in here to do work on my house, and I do need more work done on my house. I have a lot of neighbors who are elderly. I'm getting to be one of them, who do need access, who need handicap accessible parking, who have nursing visits and what have you. And we're all going to be thoroughly disrupted, but hey, Cambridge Bike Safety says do it because we demand it and we've got political clout. So anyway, it's an ongoing conflict, and I hope it can be resolved in a way that basically acknowledges the fact that Cambridge Street, Harvard Street, Mass Ave all are now got the full treatment for bicycle, separated bike lanes and whatever. And honestly, they don't really need Broadway in that mix. And Broadway is, and I, because I know I've been here for 46 years, 47 years. This is the preferred route for east west emergency vehicles who need to get someplace fast. Rarely is it the case that I don't hear at least a siren off in the distance, including at this very moment, because it's part of the function of Broadway is to do that. So I sincerely hope the city changes course on its plans for Broadway. A few other things worth mentioning. Harvard Square has some very interesting, at least two very interesting things going on. One is that, one of the bigger property owners in Cambridge right now is a gentleman named Gerald Chan. And Gerald Chan, may have had the best intentions, but he certainly has purchased. And he's basically land banking a lot of properties in Cambridge, and they're sort of sitting undeveloped. No, nothing's happening. New tenants, most famously perhaps the old Harvard Square Cinema, who's just been sitting there for what is it, 15 years or more now, nothing. And it basically kills, that was an essential part of the dynamics of Church Street, and it's just gone. So the city council is finally kind of trying to call him in on the carpet just to explain himself. It's a delicate matter. You don't want to have too much bulldozing by political people versus property owners, but I think there is some, at least having a good stiff conversation with a major property owner about what their intentions are, I think is a good thing. Even if it's just a good stiff conversation, because maybe something good will come out of it. Now, something that came up, I've known about it for quite a while, is there's the abandoned MBTA tunnel that runs under, I guess, Brattle Street. Back in the days before they extended the Red Line, the train used to pull in that way, go down to where the Kennedy School is now. Actually, there was a train yard down here. Back when I first came here, there was a train yard right there down by the river. It's now JFK Park. But that tunnel's just sitting there empty. For a while, they were just storing stuff in it. So there's these some very innovative ideas that the Harvard Square Business Association and others have been floating for turning that into essentially a venue of some sort, which would be interesting because it'd be, 12 months out of the year could be freezing cold, freezing rain. There'd be this space where people could gather and do things. They could do performances or what have you. Anyway, so they're trying to get a little bit of funding to get a full study on how this might be pulled off. But I think, we need to do some innovative things in this city. I think we should have a miniature golf course and a batting cage down in the middle of Kendall Square because it'd be cool. Central Square could use a few more interesting things. And I think Harvard Square could use a really interesting underground fortress or something. The Fortress of Solitude down there where Superman can come from. Anyway, it's very interesting to sort of see a little bit of movement on this of what has really otherwise just been a pipe dream for a long, long time. So that sounds almost ironic, a pipe dream for a tunnel. But anyway, our city clerk, Diane LeBlanc, is retiring at the end of May, I believe. It's the end of this month. Paula Crane, who's been working in the clerk's office forever and who's a wonderful person, will serve as interim clerk, and the city will likely go through a process of seeking another city clerk. But maybe Paula will do it. We'll see. Our city auditor, which is perhaps one of the less well-known of the hires the city council has, it's basically city manager, city clerk, city auditor. So Joseph McCann, he got a 3-year extension, so he'll continue on as the city auditor. One thing, oh, Owen O'Riordan, who is currently the deputy city manager, but formerly commissioner of public works, will be retiring. Owen is a great guy, one of my favorite all-time city people. And he's retiring as deputy city manager. I believe Kathy Watkins, who's currently the commissioner of public works, will step into the role of deputy city manager. And at least for a while, John Nardone, who's another wonderful person, who's the deputy commissioner of public works, will serve as the acting commissioner of public works. So we have some transitions happening around town. Maybe just a few minutes here on some of the other things that have sort of been like hot topics lately. So, again, we just finished the budget hearings, and I guess maybe we after the meeting after Memorial Day, certainly for early June, the city council will vote on the budget. There's always some controversial because somebody wants to cut the police budget or what have you, but we are in a new reality here. We don't have tremendous amount of money coming in from commercial properties, like has been floating everybody's pet projects for ages now. Commercial property value, a lot of commercial properties are vacant. They're re-tenanting these ones. They're modifying leases. The valuation of commercial properties are falling, certainly flat, if not falling. And we're actually running into a period now where we may see a shift of the property tax burden from the two-thirds that the carried by the commercial sector onto the residential. Don't know that for absolute sure, but there's going to be some more shift. And the budgets have been rising faster than inflation for a few years. There's a wonderful document from Finance Director Claire Spinner that basically, in response to requests from myself and the city councilors, to do a little crystal balling, like what if scenarios, if this property valuations do this, what will be the effect on the tax levy? And honestly, some of the possibilities in that memo were a little scary, So, can the residential population continue to get on average 9.5% increases in their property tax bills every year? And I think it's worth pointing out that this does not fall evenly on all residential property classes. Condo owners get almost, they have very, very little to worry about. Their tax bills, because of the way the residential exemption works, rise very, very little. But single, two-family, three-family homeowners like me potentially could be hit with double-digit increases in taxes per year for several years. Some of the scenarios that are played out in the memo from Chair Quispin were absolutely frightening. So it probably is time for not creating new programs, maybe not renewing the Rise Up Cambridge program, even if it makes Sumbul Siddiqui cry a little bit. Well, and certainly there's a lot of call in recent weeks from people who are arguing that some ARPA-funded COVID-era initiatives like what's called the Transition Wellness Center, which was located at Spalding Hospital, which was always meant as a transitional facility because we had to kind of de-densify places like 240 Albany Street, that was not supposed to be forever. So, all right, so now we're getting to the point where it's time to dial it back and close the Transition Wellness Center. Well, the DSA crowd and others brought out all the troops to argue how no, we should be funding that even more and more and more. Plus, we should be granting housing vouchers. We should fully fund the Rise Up successor. All of this at a time where the city management and the finance department and some of the city councilors, certainly from the finance committee, are saying, hold on, wait a minute. We can't do this. I mean, and in the middle of it all, there are people who are still calling for let's throw another $200 million in the pot to develop a municipal broadband network. It's kind of big ticket items here, right? So the city's basically, cooler heads are saying, calm down. But the activist community is still saying more, 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 more. I mean, if you're not paying the tax bills, it's very easy to say more. But if you are paying the tax bills, like a lot of owners of single family, two family, and three family houses around the city are, they're very aware. And maybe they should become even more aware about what's coming down the pike here. On any given week, you're going to hear people showing up to public comment at city council meetings saying, more, more, more. We love programs. Give us everything. So anyway, it's been kind of an interesting dynamic, to say the least. One of the things that I think is really worth noting is that, just like during the COVID period, we were getting weekly updates on COVID updates, because it was so important, so front and center, that it was deserving of either every week or every 2 weeks an update from the city manager about what we were doing, how we were doing it, how things were being funded, or whether certain things had to be delayed so that we would have the funds to support all these emergency measures. Well, now we're actually getting another, I think it's every 2 week typical update called a federal update by the city manager about the possible or actual repercussions of some of the federal grant the cutbacks and also other policies. I think this past week was quite interesting because there were immigration officials making arrests in Worcester that became a really was all over national news. So what happens when stuff like that happens in Cambridge? So there's a desire to have some real clarity from our police commissioner, from the city manager, and from others and the law department about, okay, what is Cambridge going to do in these situations? We also are Cambridge is the hometown for both Harvard and MIT, both universities of which have been in the crosshairs of the Trump administration. We can have a perfectly wonderful conversation about the rightness or wrongness of that, but it is absolutely like bulldozing form of politics that's taking place. And I have to say that our city manager has been really great, and his statements every week are really beautiful. They really speaks to the values of Cambridge, speaks to the legality of what we can and can't do. I mean, it's very easy for a political person to go up there saying, well, if an ICE official comes here, we're going to fight them tooth and nail. And they say, well, let me tell you what legally they have a right to do and what they legally can't do, and what we as a welcoming city or so-called welcoming city what our obligations are or are not. And there's a kind of an impressive level of sense being expressed by Christine Elo, who's our wonderful police commissioner, our city manager, who's been great, and our city solicitor, Megan Baer, who's also great. You know, pardon me for gushing here, but honestly, it's just been a delight to see some of these city administration people, saying things just right. You know, I've been very, very, very pleased with what I've been hearing, and we'll see. But you know something, the repercussions are, I mean, what happens if, people who are living in federal public housing projects, if eligibility requirements change, and then some pink slip comes to, or I don't know what color it would be, but a slip, a notification goes to some people who are living up in Bridge Towers and elsewhere, basically saying, you're not a citizen, your eligibility is being questioned here, get out, right? What's the city going to do? Is the city going to pick up the cost? That if the federal grant money goes away, that's a big amount of money. The vacancies appear, certainly with a lot of layoffs from Harvard and MIT necessitated. There may be housing opening up. So we're gonna there's a lot of lot of moving pieces here. Anyway, I'm going to wind it down. Hopefully, you'll see me sooner than 2.5 months from now. Anyway, this has been a delight coming back here and wishing myself another happy 70th birthday. And I'll see you again pretty soon, recorded or otherwise, on Cambridge Inside Out.